magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And I am here with somebody who's recently burst onto my radar, an incredible performer. I really like this guy's style, but also an incredible creator and thinker of magic. Blown me away over and over again. So happy to have him on the channel. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Kyle Purnell. How you doing, Kyle?
It's the best day of my life, Craig. How are you?
Man, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I'm thrilled to be here, man. I've been a fan for a very long time. Genuinely big fan, even before the Wizard Fire.
And like I said to you off camera, you're probably the only person that is. So it's it's nice that I found you. You know, we've connected, which is awesome.
Yes, I'm the one.
But you know what? I did the review on Wholesome a little while ago, and I said in there, and I'll say it again, I am such a fan of your style. The way you perform, you're so personable. And the glasses, the red glasses thing, that branding is brilliant. Like, it's just the whole package. I'm a huge fan of what you do.
Thanks.
Really am.
Yeah, I really appreciate that a lot. You know, the red glasses, I've said this before on a few things, but just really quickly, they were very much inspired by Dan Harlan and his hair that he used to have, right? And I remember on one of his lectures, he used to say, when you go into a place, restaurant, bar, whatever it is, people need to know that you're somebody, right? They don't need to know who you are. They need to know that you're somebody, right? And I'm like, that's awesome. Except I can never pull off that hair, especially with this receding hairline now, right? So I a few years ago, I had the idea for red glasses, which of course I'm not the first one. I mean, Helder Gourmet is, you know, had this years before I did, but I think his branding is more just the fact that the red kind of syncs with his tie and everything like that. For me, I just want bold red glasses and that's it. And what's nice is that I can be somebody when I want to. And if I don't want to, I can just change glasses, which I did today. So, which is nice because I didn't want to be somebody today.
That's awesome. It really is. And you know what? I want to talk about everything that you've done through your career. I want to especially talk about the stuff that you've been doing recently, because you are a prolific machine with your creations. I mean, my gosh, the stuff you're coming out with is incredible. If only you guys could see the footage that I took before the camera started rolling. But Kyle was here just blowing me away over and over again. So yeah, your magic is so strong, and I want to talk all about that. But sure. For people that don't really know who you are, I want to just start at the very beginning, if that's okay, Kyle, and just give people a bit of a backstory. And so the first question I want to ask you is, what's your origin story? How did you get into magic? What was it that kind of got that bug to bite you?
Yeah, well, I got a magic kit when I was still in the womb. I was a fetus, actually. And bizarre, really gross. Doctors were baffled, bit grossed out, actually. That is not even close. I guess I did get a magic kit, but that's not what made the bug bite. I didn't get the bug bitten until I was about in eighth grade or so. So I had a little bit of a later start. And the reason is because, so a little back story from people who don't really know. I have been and will always be someone who stutters when they talk. So, or if not person first, I'm a stutterer. Basically, sometimes when I try to say something, the words don't come out as I want to say it, or they don't come out when I want to say them, or really anything like that. Now, there's a bunch of different reasons for why people might stutter. For me, it started when I was really young. And for me, I know that it was genetic because my dad is someone who stutters. My sister is someone who stutters. His dad is someone who stutters. And it's most likely going to affect my kids too. So I have a daughter and I have a son on the way. They're probably going to stutter too, right? And I'm okay with that. I mean, it's just the way it is. And it's one of those things that's kind of tough. And I promise I'm going to get to how this relates to an origin story. But the tricky part is now, I was very fortunate growing up because my mom is a speech therapist. All right. So that's awesome. So while she didn't give me therapy, she did kind of know and have connections to give me the help that I needed to and know when to do stuff and when not to do stuff. I was able to get a lot of supports that I needed from a very young age. So from kindergarten up through ninth grade, so about 10 years, I had weekly speech therapy, sometimes through a few different sources. And long story short, when I was in ninth grade, I got dismissed, not because I'm done stuttering, because stuttering is one of those things that you just can't learn not to do. It's part of you, right? It's always part of you. But it's one of those things where I got to a point where now I think that I can hide my stutter pretty well.
I didn't even know.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. But that's also, that can be frustrating there too, because then it's hard to explain how big of a part of my life this is, right? And so growing up in middle school, junior high, you know, middle school sucks regardless, right? But if you're someone who can't get out the words you're trying to say, it's really easy for that to be, to give fuel and ammunition for relentless bullying, right? And so getting up through junior high, I was in eighth grade, and not consciously, but on some subconscious back burner in the back of my brain, I knew I wanted to be able to do something that most people couldn't, because I couldn't do something most people could, right? And so at that point, I could already juggle, you know, I was kind of like just all weird stuff that most people didn't even give the time of day. I loved that kind of stuff. So I finally realized, oh yeah, I guess I could learn magic too. And so I remember learning a back poem one night, and still to this day, I'll never forget the next morning, I had such a euphoric awakening that day. I just like the sun was shining, the birds were singing. I opened my eyes and thought, I know how to banish a card. And that was like, I'll never forget that. And it's like the weirdest thing, because it's not like I remember actually learning the effect. I just remember how I felt the next morning and how invigorated I felt. And then I went to school that day and I showed them how to banish, I showed them I could banish a card. And I was terrible at it. It sucked. It was awful. But it didn't matter because I loved it and it was amazing. And I just, and I kept going from there until a point, and it was really interesting how the roads kind of intersected again, because now that I am now into magic, I'm performing more. The more I'm performing, the more comfortable I am talking to people, new people, different people, people who know I stutter, people who don't know I stutter. And so the serendipitous part about that is it actually increased my confidence. And with the more confidence that I got, the more control I was able to have over my stuttering. So while it's always going to be a part of my life, and it's always going to be a part of how I speak, and it's always going to be something I'm always going to have to think of when I'm talking, magic is one of the big things that I think got me to a point where I could say that I am very much in control of the way I speak.
You know, that's such an inspirational story, because it's great to hear that you can get over anything if you put your mind to it. I mean, that's just incredible. It really is. That's awesome. I didn't even know that. I wouldn't have even realized. So, and I can tell that that's something that's affected you throughout your life. And the fact that you've got it, as far as I can see, completely under control, so to speak. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and that probably is the best way to say it, right? Because it's not something that's ever going to be cured. But it is something that you can manage and you can maintain. And it's also not like a goal line either. It's not like I've gotten to the point where I've managed it. No, it's not linear. It's always, you know, tomorrow I could have a very stuttery kind of day, you know? And so it's just one of those things that when you do have those days, it's good to be equipped with the skills that you've learned over the years to be able to still manage it, even when it's a little bit tough.
Well, can I ask you a question, if you don't mind? Let's say you're booked to go and do a gig. Or let's say you're doing a shoot for a company and producing a product, and you do have a stuttery day. What would you do in that situation?
Like, that's a really good question. And the answer is, I rarely stutter when I do magic. And so one of the things about stuttering that's really interesting, that indirectly relates to magic, is there's been research done that concluded that often people who stutter significantly less, or even don't stutter, when they do certain things, right? So a little fun fact for you is, people don't stutter when they sing, right? So someone could have a incredibly debilitating stutter and they start singing completely fluent, right? Here's another one. People who stutter will have significantly fewer stutters when they are whispering, which is kind of crazy. Like, that one's crazy to me. So things like that. But another one, the thing that kind of relates to magic, is they found that people who stutter significantly less when they are acting. And which kind of makes sense, because you're not you when you're acting, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if I was playing the part of Johnny in the school play, Johnny doesn't stutter, right? And it's not a conscious decision to not stutter, but it's just one of those things that if I'm actually channeling a different character, something happens in the brain that tells me that I'm Johnny now. Johnny doesn't stutter. Johnny's suave, you know, things like that, and you don't stutter. And as we know, there's definitely a significant aspect of acting in magic, right? Ooh. And so even though I'm still me when I'm being a magician, I am Kyle the Magician. I'm not Kyle the Stutterer, right? And so when I'm Kyle the Magician, I very rarely stutter, which is really fortunate, actually, now that I've gotten to the point where, you know, I do have the confidence as a magician now, too. Like, when I first started, it wasn't the case. But now that I kind of do have, you know, just Kyle, and then I turn on and I'm Kyle the Magician, when I'm Kyle the Magician, it's very rare that I'll stutter.
Wow. That's fascinating. I didn't know that. That's incredible. Wow, I'm blown away. That happens very rarely. Okay, that's brilliant. Well, so let's carry on with the journey. So you are hugely into magic. You've got into magic. You're showing, you've learned a back palm. And then I'm guessing from there, whole world opens up to you. And it's not just the back palm, and it's lots and lots of stuff.
Yep, never actually did the back palm again for the rest of my life. I'm kind of against back palming now.
I've just been sitting here for the last 5 minutes imagining you now doing stage manipulation. So,
I have probably the world's worst back palm because I never practiced it since then.
That's so funny. I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know the answer to. I'm guessing you're a full-time pro. Is that right?
No, I'm actually not.
I thought you were.
No, I am semi-pro, or as my good friend Vince put it, that I like the sound of this better, I'm a part-time professional, because semi-pro makes it seem like I'm almost good, right? And so actually my full-time job is I am a speech therapist.
Right, okay. Now things are starting to come together, right? Okay. Well, you know what? I said to somebody on a recent interview that some of the best magicians are people that have a job and then do magic as well. Because when you become a professional and your entire income revolves around performing, you suddenly have to make certain sacrifices. Mm. There's certain tricks that you might do that you have to do because you know that that's going to work in that environment. I freaking hate the ambitious card, but I do it, and the reason I do it is because I know that it's one of those routines that's just going to get a great reaction. But artistically, if I was true to myself, I wouldn't do the ambitious card. I don't care about a card coming to the top of the deck. But commercially, I've got a mortgage to pay, so I'm making that bloody card come to the top of the deck. But so the point I'm trying to make is I think that John Bannon, John Gustafaro, Guy Homework. The list goes on and on. there's so many amazing magicians. And I think that the most creative magicians are the ones where they're allowed to be artistic because their choice of performing material isn't based on a financial end goal, if that makes sense.
You know, I definitely have a luxury, not having to rely on magic as a full time. Now, my goal is to maybe sometime change that, but that's definitely a few years away. I'm not strictly married to the idea of going full time, but I'm definitely considering it. But it is nice having the luxury of knowing that I do have job security, I do have income coming in, and I still am able to kind of unwind and escape from the world by using this, just kind of creating and thinking about magic, right? It's nice that that's an escape. As I imagine, as a full-time pro, Craig, it's probably harder to escape from your 9-to-5 when your 9-to-5 is your form of escape too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're almost immersed in magic 24/7. Yeah, completely. And it sounds like, from speaking to you, your full-time job, so to speak, is something that you're passionate about as well. I imagine that.
I am. You know, it's really, that's one of the things that is a deciding factor too. Like, if I ever get to that fork on the road where I do decide to, go full time or to keep doing what I'm doing, the deciding factor is the fact that I'm really fortunate that this job is one that has, it's really easy to see the impact that you're making, right? So like, it's very concrete impact because we literally take data on the progress that they're making, right? You can see that you're making a difference in a child's life, right? Because I work in a school, and so that's really nice. And with magic, I also know that we make differences in people's lives too, right? I can think of a few stories offhand where someone came into the residency that I have and they were having a really, excuse my French, shitty day. And they needed that magic, right? And that's kind of a very concrete example, but often you don't necessarily see that the impact that you're making because you're going from group to group to group to group. And you might make a difference in someone's life, but you might not even know it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that concrete difference would be the thing that I would be missing a lot if I were to ever walk away from my career right now, because I love, starting a school year and then ending the school year and seeing, wow, like, you have made a tremendous difference. And I love that I was part of this journey with you.
I can imagine. And was your mom a big influence for you in your decision to become a speech therapist? Because you said that she was a speech therapist.
Yeah, both. Actually, my mom and my dad, right? Because my mom is a speech therapist. My dad stutters. I'm both, it's one of those things that, because of this, I was very much in the speech therapy world growing up, kind of on both sides. The fact that I had difficulty speaking and the fact that my mom was always telling me about her work. So absolutely, she was a huge of that. And it was also really inspiring that my dad, even though he stutters growing up, he stuttered a lot less than I did, right? So it was one of those things where I wanted to get to a point where I could do that. So then I decided to go to school for this. And it's been really cool to be on the other side of the proverbial table and be able to hopefully change some kids' lives.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Well, here's a question for you. Who was your influence, or did you have any mentors or any magicians that you looked up to as you were getting into magic? Because obviously you've got your mom there, and you've got almost a family business when it comes to speech therapy, but you're trying to learn magic. You haven't got anyone in your family that does magic.
Yeah.
Who were your inspirations getting into magic with me?
So regarding mentors and magic, I didn't have that luxury, right? Because I didn't have a lot of resources to have that personal one-on-one mentorship, which is absolutely the best way to do it. I didn't have that luxury growing up. So, but I definitely had magicians I looked up to. One of them we talked off camera about, Richard Sanders. Love him to this day. I know he knows of me, but we aren't super close. So, Richard, if you're watching this, I promise I'm not weird and creepy. I'm just a fan. All right, a little weird and creepy, but definitely more of a fan. I also love, Francis Minotti. I love, even though he's definitely more of a later influence, I didn't really get into his work until I was very much established. He is a huge influence on kind of the way I structure things. I never considered that you could do callbacks and foreshadowing in a magic show. What? That's like theater. Yeah, it's theater, and it's amazing, right? And he definitely inspired that, and I love his absurdist approach, and a lot of my presentations. So in the one of my effects, the Hancock effect, my presentation, which some people love, it's to borrow a phrase of yours, Craig, it's a bit like Marmite. You either love it or you hate it. And so I have a presentation in my the Hancock effect that is very much inspired by his kind of wacky and whimsical and absurdist approach to presentations. So he's a huge one. And the other one is Paul Harris. Love Paul Harris. And his thinking really inspired the way I think about some things too. Definitely not to get into exposing methods, but a lot of his work with cards, it's not just like he doesn't just look at a deck of cards as a deck of cards. He sees, okay, so this is a deck of cards. Oh, this card has a lot of white. Oh, this has a border. And if you rotate it this way, it still has a border. And if you cover up discrepancies here and here and here, like, okay, wow, he's using a different set of rules, right? I want to use a different set of rules too. And so that was very inspiring as well.
Well, what's interesting there is the three people that you've named are three of the most creative magicians I can possibly imagine. Like, but they're all creative in a very different way. Like, yeah. Paul Harris, like you said, the techniques he comes up with are just completely left field. And I do look at a lot of your material, and there's so much creativity that you seem to approach magic in a different way to everyone else. So maybe that's where that came from, is maybe your earlier influences, maybe.
Yeah, and I do try to approach it from a different perspective. And I find that a lot of people, especially on the Magic Cafe, don't understand that. Every time I have a new effect come out, I just brace myself because I know that very many people are not going to understand what I'm hoping to bring to the table here, right? Because the way I think about it, and it's actually something that I say in my lectures, is the way I think about it is kind of like a scale. Right, just one of those traditional balance scales, and it's always important to be hyper aware of what I value as a priority and what value as a sacrifice that I'm willing to make. Right, mm-hmm. And as long as my priorities are heavier than my sacrifices, then I know that I have a method that I want. Right, and so let's talk about wholesome, for example. There's a sacrifice in there that I'm willing to make that I totally understand that a lot of people aren't, and that is you have to use the box, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people don't like that. It's not very purist, right? I get that. That's fine. That's probably not a method that you want to use then, but that is a sacrifice I'm willing to make because it makes the effect impromptu. Right, so it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make in order for it to be impromptu. This the impromptu has more weight than the box in play. So it's a method that works for me, right? And then I think, okay, well, yeah, it's a box, okay, but why do we use magic wands in a cups and balls routine, right? We are having something to account for the magic. They don't know how to move a hole in a card, so for all they know, you do need a box to slide the hole across, right? And that's kind of my thinking. David Stone with his tool effect, right? I mean, that he's kind of using that as a magic wand, right? And something, and it's good enough for David Stone, it's good enough for me. And so it's that kind of thing. So it can be a little bit polarizing, my approach, because I understand that what I value is often different than what other people value. And it's just something that I have to be okay with, because I also know that a lot of people do value the same things I do too. And those are the people that I'm hoping are going to get a lot out of the effects that I put out there.
Well, you know, a couple of things on that. Number one, a lot of the people on the Magic Cafe have one agenda, and it's just to make people feel bad. You know,
well, kudos.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, with regards to Wholesome, yeah, you have to use a box, but you've routined it in such a really clever way that the box feels like it's just there. It doesn't feel like it's part of the method. It just feels like the box is there because it's there, which is probably that's what makes it so clever, in that, yeah, the box is part of the method, but you routined it in a way that the box feels natural to be in the hand at the same time as the card, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's really good. Yeah. Okay. Well, as we've gone down this whole creativity rabbit hole, let's continue down there. I want to find out, first of all, though, when did you decide that you wanted to be a creator? So we've gone from, you know, an eighth grade kid who's learned the back palm to someone who's become fascinated with magic. You're performing magic. You're loving learning new magic. When did you decide, you know what, I want to actually start being a creator and starting to not just create stuff for myself, but create stuff that I can eventually offer to others?
I've always found it fascinating. That was one of the most fascinating parts, even just getting into it a few years. And I always kind of softly wanted to do it. Like it was never, you know, be a creator by this date kind of thing. But I always thought that was one of the most captivating parts about magic. Like how cool is that? Like it's cool to do your, you know, to do magic. But if you can fool somebody with something that you came up with in here, I mean, that's got to be one of the most satisfying things in the world, right? And so it's always something I found fascinating. And I think it kind of goes back to just my nature is someone who doesn't get their hopes up kind of thing. So it's always a, hey, that would be nice if, and I'm just going to keep chugging away at it. So I just, you know, came up with ideas. And, you know, I would think of it as a, oh, this is really cool. I like this. No one else will. And then I just came, you know, I just kept getting these ideas until they got to a point where the ideas really didn't suck anymore. And they started to be okay. And then the okay ideas, and we have a difference of opinion on this, because in my opinion, an okay idea of mine that I came up with a long time ago was that other moving hole effect. You said you like that more, which is very flattering actually. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's cool. It's okay. But there's more we can do with it. So we get to a point, and I kind of have this mantra that I know a lot of other people do, which is I'm never satisfied. Which is a good thing, right? I know Garrett Thomas talked about this. I've heard Eric Jones, I think one of his lecture notes is something like that. My lecture notes is called Never Finished, because I'll go back to an effect months, years down and go back and tweak it, because once it's kind of marinated in my repertoire for a while, I'm like, okay, it's good. I wonder how we can make it better. And often we can, even if it's just that 1 degree John Guastafaro thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we are. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, you know what? I love the answer. I love the answer. We're going off at a complete tangent, but that's what I love about these interviews.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the first thing you ever released?
The first thing I ever released was that other hole effect.
Really?
Okay. That was the first thing I ever released. It was, I almost don't count it though, because it was an independent thing. It was just shot at my parents' house when I was still living at home. You know, and my sister was my videographer, and it got me like a couple hundred bucks. You know, it was a soft release, and no one knew me, right? But my first, what I would call major release, is something called Promotion, it's on my Murphy's Magic Lecture, but it's also its own product, back when DVDs were a thing. And it is a bill change, but it was a bill change that was with a signed bill. So you could borrow a $5 bill, have them sign the $5 bill, have them see the $5 bill, shake it, turns into a 20, and then you open it up. Now the 20 has their signature on it. And methodologically it's practical, but financially it's maybe not as practical, right? because if you borrow the $5 bill, you're probably going to want to give it back away, right? So that was that got a lot of mixed reviews. Looking back on it, I'm fully willing to admit that I rushed that to market because it's a really good method, but I didn't really think through the best way to use it. So the advice that was given on the DVD is not the advice that I would give now, but it was included in my Murphy's Magic lecture. And the advice that I gave on that is what I still believe. And that is, if you're gonna do this piece, don't do it like walk around, right? Because there's a bunch of other bill changes that are suited for walk around. This is something that's suited for a more formal, like close up, or parlor. Because the strength of this that you can't do with anything else is the signature, right? Mm. And that would be a killer giveaway. So you got to give away the 20. It's good, goes from a 5 to a 20. So it's like a $15 investment. But if you do it at the right time, it's $15 that I can't afford not to do, right? And so now if I do it, I only do it at formal shows.
Well, you know what? That's the sort of thing that people remember. I think magicians fool themselves into thinking that folded up, signed, beer-soaked playing card with someone's signature on it is going to be something that people treasure for the rest of their life. Oh, I'm going to put that in my wallet. I'm going to hold on to it for 20 years. Bullshit. It's going in the bin. It's going in the trash the second they leave that place. But that's the sort of thing that people remember. Oh, he took my five and turned it into a 20. That sticks with people.
That's been my experience for sure.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. You've worked with a lot of magic companies. You've released stuff yourself independently. Just off the top of my head, I know that you've worked with Penguin, mm-hmm. Illusionist, Cosmo, mm-hmm. Mermis Direct. I mean, wow, you know, you're spreading yourself around a bit. I mean, all of the big companies are wanting you to work with them, which is amazing. Have you got any advice on, you know, let's say somebody's watching this and they consider themselves creative, they've got a trick that they've been sitting on, it's road tested, they think the method's unique, they've done their research, they've done their due diligence, they're at a position where they want to release it.
Yeah.
Somebody who's worked with so many different companies, what advice would you say in terms of bringing that to market?
As opposed to kind of where to go with it kind of thing? So I think it's important. Person that we're talking about right now, you clearly know what you're talking about. Like you clearly have your effect. You've done your due diligence, as you said, Craig. But you also need to know about the companies, right? And each one of those companies has different aesthetics. Each one of those companies has different branding. Each one of those companies has different strengths, right? And I don't know if I could come up with some off the top of my head, but I do know that Illusionist has, I mean, their trailers are like from movies, right? I mean, their videos are just insane, right? So that's one of their strengths. And I certainly wouldn't even I can't think of any like weaknesses per se, but it is important to know that if you go to Illusionist, it's not going to be sourced out to other places. The only place people can get it more or less is Illusionist, right? Because they don't wholesale to other places, right? So that's something you have to consider when you're going to someone like Illusionist. Penguin is also similar to that too. Like if you do a download with Penguin, it's just on Penguin. If you do something with Murphy's, it does get distributed to all the shops, but then you have to consider, oh, well, then if it gets distributed to all the shops, but you're not doing it with Penguin, but Penguin's probably the biggest one, So if you did it with Penguin, Penguin would promote it, and that might get you more visibility, right? And so you also have to know, I'll give you an example here. There's a deck of cards, this is a gimmick deck of cards that's coming out through Vanishing Ink, hopefully this year sometime. It's called the Big Picture deck, and I'm very excited about it. And I won't perform it for you guys, but just so you know, it's a deck of cards with a bunch of words on, right? And gimmicked in a pretty fun way. And that is something that I would never in a million years pitch to Illusionist, because it clearly doesn't go with their aesthetic, right? I could be wrong, and maybe Illusionist would have loved to jump on it, but in my head, I'd like to try to be hyper aware of what I know that different companies tend to go towards and tend to lean towards. And this didn't strike me as an Illusionist product. And that doesn't mean it's good. So if I did pitch it to Illusionist and they said no, I also have to know that I can't take it personally, right? Because it might not be because it's not good. It might be because it doesn't go with their aesthetic or it doesn't go with their brand, and that's okay. And then I have to go to another place. Now, I will say Penguin, we were talking about Sean Dunn before, and I don't think this is a trade secret, so I'll tell you what he told me before. And Sean, if you're watching, I'm sorry if this is a trade secret. He told me, because once I told him that I had an effect that now is known as the elimination experiment, and I did it with Cosmo instead, but I was just kind of talking to Sean about it. And I said, I don't know if this would be something that goes with your brand, goes with your aesthetic. And he said, whoa, 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 Kyle, Penguin Magic is like the Walmart of magic. Okay. We'll do pretty much anything, right? So like, Penguin Magic in itself is kind of more broad than a lot of other of those brands, right? Because Vanishing Ink's got that cool, sleek feel to it. Illusionists, especially older Illusionists, kind of have that edgy feel. And Penguin Magic does kind of have that Walmart feel, right? It kind of encapsulates everything. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just those are some things that you might want to keep in mind when trying to pick a company that you want to work with.
That's amazing advice. That is absolutely brilliant advice. Which company did you have the most fun with out of all of the ones that you've worked with? I'm not saying that you hate the other ones at all. I know you're one of the nicest people I've ever met. So I know that you're not going to say anything bad about anybody. And that's one of the reasons I love you. You don't burn bridges. I've seen people and I've interviewed people that are like, screw this company, screw them. You don't do that. I mean, you might be annoyed with a company, and I wouldn't know about it because you don't believe in burning bridges. You're just super nice to everybody. Even when I was talking about the Magic Cafe, and I was like, oh, the people on the, you're super nice. So I could learn something from you, to be honest, Kyle. Which company did you have I'm sure you had a great experience with all of them.
Yeah, I did. They're all great. You know what? I'm going to take your question in a different direction. I'm going to tell you the best thing about working with every single one of them.
That's all cool.
Right. So the best thing, let's start with Cosmo. The best thing about working with Cosmo is he treats you like a king. And every time I go up there, he always takes me to the cellar restaurant, which is, it's pricey. And, he says, get whatever drinks you want, get whatever food you want. He treats you like a king there. It is wonderful. So that's what I love about that. When I worked with Illusionists, they flew us down to Kentucky where Cody Nottingham lives. And we did that. And it was really cool. Not only did they obviously pay for the flights, they paid for the rooms, but before we went back to the rooms, so that was something that Zach Evans and I did together. And he said, oh, okay, let's go to, and I forget what the store was called. It was more of a Southern chain. And we went down there and he said, okay, get what you want. So, like they took us on like this like grocery store shopping spree kind of thing. And we could just get whatever snacks we wanted. I'm like, we didn't even ask for this, but that's cool, I guess. But we were kind of awkward about it. So I'm like, okay, I don't want to take advantage of this. I'll get some Pop-Tarts. And so no, I literally just got Pop-Tarts. And I think beef jerky, because beef jerky is something you never buy for yourself. I don't care who you are. It is the most delicious food in the world, but you never buy it for yourself because it's so darn expensive. So I had to get some beef jerky. So that was really cool about working with Illusionist. You'll notice that all my answers are food centric. I love food.
I'm noticing this. I'm seeing a pattern.
Let's see. Vanishing Ink, I'll tell you this. The best part of the Vanishing Ink, and this might seem a little trivial, but it's actually really valuable to me, and it means a lot to me. They're probably, and I'm not saying that the others are bad at this, but they're probably the best communicators. So George at Vanishing Ink, he always gets back to me like minutes later after I email him, and they're always just willing to communicate like super well, super quickly. I love the communication when working with Vanishing Ink. And I think there's someone, Murphy's was awesome. I love, the best part about Murphy's is Javier, hands down. Javier is the best part about Murphy's. I will die on that hill.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's the best thing that's going on in Murphy's. He really is. Okay, that's cool. Let's quickly talk about Drop Call, because to be honest, that's the first thing that put you on a lot of people's radar, because everybody knows Illusionist, and they pushed that product hard. Like, they really pushed it. You did that with Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And I always find it interesting where creators team up together. Like, two of my favorite creators are David Jonathan and Nicholas Mavresis. Mm-hmm. And they were telling me recently, they've just collaborated on this thing they're bringing out through Murphy's, which they showed me and was unbelievable.
It's not the one with the cinema cards.
Mm-hmm.
He showed me. It is unbelievable.
It's crazy good. Crazy good.
I couldn't believe it. It fooled me when I saw it.
It fooled me completely. I had no idea how it worked. It's like, I said to them, when this comes out, I think it's coming out in the next few months, this is going to be trick of the year, hands down. Nothing's going to touch it.
It is unbelievable. So clever.
I can't wait for people to see that. But I find it interesting where two creators team up. Now, in David and Nicholas's case, they're friends. They jam every day, and they help each other with their own creations. How did you and Zach, you guys seem very different to each other. How did you and Zach kind of get this whole Avengers team up thing going on, and then end up with an Illusionist coming in on it as well? Like, where did that come from?
The way I usually like to say it, and then I'll tell you about how it actually came apart. So Zach is the person that makes my good ideas great. He serves that role in my circle of magic friends, and he does this with a bunch of things. Actually, again, I hate to keep plugging the Murphy's lecture, but there's an effect. It's the last effect on there, and it's the same thing. It was good, and then he just was playing around with it, and he came up with something that is actually kind of an unbelievable discovery, and I don't know how he came across it. It was almost serendipitous, but he does this. Like, I'll share him with something, and he's like, "Oh, that's awesome!" And then he'll just marinate on it for weeks, months, and then he'll get back to me, and then be like, "I think I have an idea how to make this better." And then it does, without a doubt, it's always better. And so Zach is quite a few years younger than me. And so he, actually the first time we met was at my very first lecture, ever. And, I guess we were Facebook friends at the time. I didn't really know. And he came out, and it was fun. We kind of got to know each other a little bit. And then I did a lecture at Mark D'Souza's house, which is kind of close to where Zach lives. And, Zach came out to that one too. And then I'm like, okay, yeah. And then we started jamming a bit. And then he came to Magic Fest one year with us. So he stayed with us that night, and I showed him Dropped Call. And he was going to school for, oh man, at the time, I don't remember what it was. I think it's industrial design now. He has the he completes me. It's basically what I'm saying. he has the know-how to do the things that I don't, right? So like I had the original idea of what I wanted, and then I was able to cobble up a pretty good prototype for what it was, right? But I didn't have a lot of resources. I certainly don't have a background in electrical work. I don't have a background in 3D printing or industrial design or anything like that. I just knew what I wanted. I made a handmade prototype that worked, and I used it for a long, long time. And I showed Zach, and Zach said, yeah, that's awesome. I can make it better. and so few words. So when I pitched it to Illusionist, actually that year at Magi Fest, I then went to Zach and I said, hey, because when I showed it to Illusionist, I showed it with my original handmade prototype. So, you know, yeah, I'm pretty proud of that handmade prototype, even though compared to what it is now, it looks like shit. Like it is terrible, but like, I'm still pretty proud of it. And I asked Zach, could you make a really nice prototype for me? So we could send a really nice prototype to Illusionist. And he just, oh my gosh, he didn't make a nice prototype. He like redefined it. He redesigned it. He made it precision. So like, again, without exposing too much, you know how in the actual product, when you have to do the sneaky stuff that you have to do at the end to become clean, right? The ditch, right? And how smooth that is, like how buttery smooth that is. That's all Zach. That is all Zach. Mine was so cack handled, like you had to, like I had to like pry the phone case open in order to do the dirty work. But he spent literally hundreds of hours getting that precision made so much that it just ditches like butter. So then we were able to do that. I said, would you like to be on the project? Because you put in so much work on this, it would be unfair to you if you weren't in this project. And he said, yeah. So he flew out with me and my family down to Kentucky. And as you can tell, I'm pretty close with my family. they just come everywhere with me. Zach was there, and we filmed it together. And I'm really glad because at first, when I said, "Hey, can Zach come and film with us?" They're like, the guys at E are like, "Yeah." And then after we filmed, then they said, "Yeah, but before we met Zach, we weren't really sure. Like, does he really need to be here? I mean, like, Kyle, you can do this." But then they said, after we saw Zach perform and he crushed it, I can see why you had him come along, and I can see why he was so valuable to this project. And he may be getting some extra work with Illusionist. I'm not sure if it fell through or not, but yeah. So he's a really good performer, really good with making prototypes, and really good with making good effects. Great.
That's fantastic. That is. Yeah. That's great. That's incredible. Okay. Let me ask you one more question on the subject of creativity, which is, do you have any advice for people that are watching this? They want to create their own magic trick. Let's be honest, I've talked about this on the channel before. It's kind of that holy grail, isn't it? When you come into magic, creators are put upon a pedestal, rightfully or wrongly. It's kind of, they're the people that we look up to, which is why there's so many people coming into magic that create. And it's probably why there's so many bad downloads, which I've obviously got to be in my bonnet about, which let's not get into that today. But any advice on creating a good magic trick on how to go through that creative process so you can bring something out that doesn't completely suck?
Yes. got a few things. First of all, we'll do a little bit of tough love. And the tough love is, if someone says, man, I wish I could create like that, really probably you don't, right? Because if you did, you would be just working relentlessly at it, right? You know, it's like one of those things where, you know, if someone sees someone drawing, you're like, man, I wish I could draw like you. Like, I imagine the artist is like, well, then draw, like, do it, put in the work. Like, I didn't get to this point just because it's a God-given gift. Like, I do believe in God-given gifts, but I do believe that God-given gifts need to be nurtured and practiced a ton in order to get it to the point where it is good, right? So, like, so if someone does wish that they could create, do it. Just do it, and you gotta be there. But the other thing is, and by the way, before I continue, I hope that didn't come across as, you know, holier than thou, because I don't want it to come across that way. But it's just one of those things. If you really want to do this, then you put in the work to it. Now, what is the work, right? What are the criteria? It's one thing for me to say, just do it, right? That's not really that helpful. So the criteria for me, so we've all heard the mantra that just because it's different doesn't mean it's good, right? Mm-hmm. And I totally believe that. But I propose to you tonight, Craig, that is an incomplete mantra. And I think the complete one is, just because it's different doesn't mean it's good. And just because it's good doesn't mean it's worthy. And here's how I know this. One of my favorite things that I have created is called the Business Card Utility Slate. And there's a routine that I do with this. One of my favorite routines is called Snack Man, which is like a Pac-Man, and it's an animated ink, and it travels across the business card and it eats cherries, and it's really fun. It's really visual. It's very cool, but that's not anywhere near where it started. It started with a color change I was working on with just a standard deck of cards. And it was a color change that was different. It was different and it was good. It was good, it was different. And the reason I know it was good is because I tried it and it fooled people. It was good. Hey, nice, good. It was different, and it was a different method than I've ever seen before. Awesome, great. Except, even though it was different and it was good, at the end of the day, I was shaking a card like this in order to make a change, and it was really hard. Like, it was a hard slate. And I'm like, okay, this looks just the same as a twirl change would, right? But a twirl change is a whole hell of a lot easier. Right. So it's different. It's good. It wasn't worthy. Mm. Right. And, but because it was good, I kind of, stuck a fork in that, because I wanted to come back to it because I knew it was good. So that means I wasn't just going to abandon the whole track. Right. I wanted to come back to it. And I did. And so, I talk about this on the lecture, but I got to a point where I realized, okay, so this is good, but what if I changed this and I tweaked this and I rotated this and I used business cards instead? And oh, now this implements a new principle in here too, but I can still use the traditional method that I was using. And then I got to a point where I'm like, okay, now, yeah, this move is still kind of hard, but it allows you to do something that nothing else before, as far as I was aware, was allowed you to do, right? And now it brought something new to the table. Now it's worthy, right? So if you want to create, first decide if you really truly want to and you're willing to put in the work, or if you say you want to because you feel like you need to because of that whole pedestal syndrome that we have going on in this community, right? But if you really want to, you're really willing to put in the work, try to figure out, yeah, is it good, but is it also worthy? And if you find that it is, and it does allow you to do something that other things in the past that you're aware of don't allow you to do, and there actually is a reason to add this to the fraternity, so to speak. Absolutely, and that's one of the coolest things, right? We get to share additions to push the art forward. I don't think it's worth sharing something if the art is just going to stay where it is, right? If you're going to put an offering in, make it so that it kind of pays it forward.
I totally see where you're coming from. And I'm thinking about, again, Wholesome. You brought something new to the plot. I mean, let's be honest, people have been moving holes around in playing cards for years. I've performed for probably 20 years now, Michael Close's pothole trick.
It's great effect, yeah.
Incredible, incredible. But what you did with that is you were able to engineer a moving hole plot and make it impromptu, which is something that has never been done before.
Thank you. I appreciate the kind words, and I also appreciate that you see it kind of the way that I was hoping people would see it. I guess that would be another piece of advice too, is not necessarily go out of your way to find this, but if you can start to be aware of a niche that you have as a creator, like what do you tend to kind of lean towards, and what do people see you as, right? So like one of my good friends is Nicholas Lawrence, who is just a beast of a creator and a beast of a gimmick maker, right? Now there are some exceptions, but for me, I am by and large not a huge gimmick maker. As evidenced by, I needed to bring Zach on to do the dropped call, right? It is not really my strength. He's the gimmick guy. Look at my friend Josh Janowski. He's the bill guy. Like, he does magic with bills. Like, when you think of creators, you think of all of these different things, right? Trying to think of someone else. Oh, David Jonathan. He's like the deck guy, right? He has all these like crazy ideas to gimmick and like gimmick systems into a deck of cards, and I love that, right? For me, and again, there are outliers, but I love the idea of doing things that look like they should require a gimmick, but they don't. Mm. So you would see that with so the Hancock effect is like that, the Snack Man is like that, Wholesome is like that, it's one thing to. Because I actually remember Craig on the Wizard Product Review a long time ago, you would always say, well, why would I bother with this gimmick if I can do a very similar thing with sleight of hand, right? And I love that, right? And I think that, to be honest with you, and I don't know for sure, but I feel like that may have been kind of a seed of inspiration to thinking, well, what can we take that one step further? You know, why would I use a gimmick if I can do a similar thing with sleight of hand? But what if I can do something that looks like it uses a gimmick? Like, it looks so good with a gimmick, but it's just impromptu, right? And I love that idea, like gimmickless magic. Paul Harris does a lot of that too, right? Like a lot of his stuff looks like it should require a gimmick. The thing that comes to mind is like Bleach Blackjack, right? It looks like you use a blank card, right? But you're not. Right? And I love that mentality, and I love, like, that's the thing that really really gets my creative juices flowing. Like, oh, okay, so yeah, how can I make something look like it might use a prop, but make it so practical that you can actually get into it anytime? You don't have to think about bringing something with you.
Wow, that, yeah, I totally see where you're coming from. That's brilliant. I want to ask you two more questions, and sure. And the next question is completely unrelated to creativity at all, but it's something I want to ask you about. You mentioned Richard Sanders earlier on, and you said that he's a inspiration to you, and I completely agree. He's probably my favorite. Yeah. Musician. I'm going to pay you the biggest compliment that I could possibly pay anybody, in that your performing style reminds me a lot of Richard's. Genuinely, in that you're naturally quite funny, without even trying. You're very personable, and you're very likable, from the first second like you speak to you, it's like, oh, I like this guy. Don't even know him, but I like him. And and the thing is, as magicians, we spend hours and hours and hours learning about magic and learning what tricks to do. And this should be an opener and this should be a closer. But one thing that we forget is it's all about people. It's about going up to people, especially in a gigging situation. You've got to walk up to a group of people that you've never met before that are probably having their own conversation. And within a few seconds, you've got to get them to not only pay attention to you, but actually watch you do magic when they were probably in the middle of something else. And it's that element that a lot of magicians struggle with, that kind of social interaction. I've talked on the channel before about a T-shirt that I used to wear at Blackpool to annoy magicians. It said on it in big letters, magic. And then I said, because sometimes social ineptitude and masturbation just isn't enough. I used to just wear that to annoy magicians back in the day.
That's awesome.
I bring that back out. But I suppose this is a long-winded way of saying you seem to have that. Like, you can literally immediately grab people's attention without even trying. I don't know if that's a thing that you've worked on or if it's just something that comes naturally, but is it something that you could give us some advice on and how to actually create that interaction outside of magic, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've worked on. 100%. Even probably even 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago, if you saw a performance video of me from 10 years ago, you wouldn't even recognize the guy. And the reason is probably around that time, going back to the whole, oh, I wish I could. I had that moment. I was like, you know, because I was looking at my performance video and it was kind of cringy. And I was like, you know what? I wish I could be a better performer. And I didn't just say it, I meant it. So I would look at the footage and say, what do I like about this? What don't I like about this? And the thing I realized was that, and I know you know this, I know probably a lot of magicians know this, but spectators don't like magic as much as they think they do, right? They like the time and the good time, the experience that we are as magicians facilitating through magic. But if they really liked magic as much as we do, then they'd probably be magicians, right? We love magic. And I think that that's where the turning point was for me, because I realized, okay, I'm putting so much of my focus on the magic. But wait a second, Kyle, you've been doing this for a while now. You don't have to put as much focus on the magic. Like, that, it's almost second nature to you now, because you've been doing this daily for a long time. Stop focusing on that. Stop focusing on the magic. Start focusing on you and start focusing on them, and start focusing on how are we going to take two people, me and the spectator, who've never met each other, and form this relationship within a very short amount of time. So the one thing I do, and I'll give you a specific piece of advice, especially to anybody out there who's married. I often, when I can find it, right now, I actually lost my wedding ring, so I bought a new one. It's on its way right now. Kelsey, my wife, is awesome. She's totally cool with it. But she knows I lose everything, which is why I'm really scared that I just bought a $200 coin set, because I know it's going to be like flushed on the toilet soon. But whenever I approach a table, within the first few sentences, most of the time, sometimes I could do a different routine, but especially if they haven't met me, yeah, if I do have my wedding ring on, I will do something with the ring first, and I will tell them a story. And this is the story I say. I say, do you know what this is? Oh, this is a Mexican jumping ring. I was actually on my honeymoon in Cozumel, Mexico. I was snorkeling with my wife in the Caribbean Ocean, and I lost my first ring and fell off, never more to be found. And so that's the story. So what does that do? That establishes the fact that I'm human, right? I don't think that I'm hoity-toity and on my high horse because I know a magic trick that and everybody else doesn't, right? So like one of the first things I tell them is that I screwed up. I lost my wedding ring, right? That immediately grounds me, And I think that's really important. And the other thing is, I tell them that I'm married. So especially if I go to like a young couple and the guy's trying to impress the girl, I don't want him to feel threatened by me. Not that he would. Do you see this receding hairline? But you know, people are weird, right? Because they have these preconceived notions about who magicians are, right? So I immediately want to let them know that I'm taken, I'm in love, I am happily married, and I make mistakes just like you guys do. Hey, let's have some fun, right? And so that, I think that immediately negates any preconceived notions that they might have, and then we can start at a blank slate, and then we can just build a relationship up from there.
That's great. That's great advice. That really is. And I hope everybody that's watching this has listened to that. That's absolutely incredible. You mentioned,
so if you're not married, do it, because magic will be easier.
There you go. Magic is easier when you're married. just hiding your magic purchases becomes harder. So yeah, you talked about this coin set that you've got lying around somewhere that you've hopefully not lost, I hope. I've never really seen you do much coin magic, Kyle. Obviously, we have the my favorite routines for drop call is the whole premise of making a coin disappear using the, right. the bonus misdirection, which is why I fell in love with it in the first place. And by the way, on that note, I don't know if you know Gary Jones. He's a very
I know of him. I don't know him personally.
Okay, well, I was chatting to Gary just the other day, and he said to me that the best trick he's purchased in the last 5 years is drop call.
And, oh my gosh!
And like. You, I don't know if you, obviously you've probably seen Gary's releases, but over here in the UK, he is like the godfather of close-up magic. Like he's the modern day Di Vernon of the UK magic community. Like,
oh my gosh.
And he just said to me, he said, yeah, the best thing I've purchased in the last few years is drop call, without a shadow of a doubt. He does it at every gig.
Wow.
This is a guy that can do so much coin magic, and he's just swears by drop call now. So there you go.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But outside of that, I've never really seen you do much coin magic. So is it something that you do?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't consider myself a coin magician per se. I'm definitely proficient with coins. The coin set in particular is Split Focus by Greg Wilson. Wonderful set. I don't know this for a fact, but I may have purchased it after I watched your review of it. And it was awesome. It was so good. And the reason I buy it, because I don't really impulsively buy effects at this point in my career. I usually only buy things if I know exactly where I'm going to put it. And actually, I put it in that drop call routine, because usually what I do is I have a routine called ring coins. It started off using a shell and a flipper. And I would just pull coins out of my ring, because I love the idea of, instead of just pulling coins out of the air, having kind of a catalyst for the magic. So it's the ring that's magic. Let me show you. And you can pull it. It's kind of like the coin purse, but I think it's even more magical, because obviously the size contrast is so much more drastic. So I love pulling dollar sized coins out of my tiny ring. I just think it's really cool. So, but the split focus makes it a lot easier. And there's a lot more visual contrast, because it's dollar sized coins instead of half dollars. So, so I would say I'm definitely not a coin magician. I know my way around coins for sure. But I love the split focus. So now what the routine is I just start with my ring, I pull out a coin, pull out a second one, shake the third one out, put my ring back on. And then kind of do the Greg Wilson thing where he explains the misdirection, because the other two are shiny, and you do those kind of things. And then he said, but now we have a problem, because we have one left. So we need something shiny over here. That's when I do, I go in for a dropped call. And so now three coins appeared, three coins vanished, the last one vanishes, which is super strong, and then the phone vanishes. And that's kind of my opening walk around routine now.
Talk about beating people up with magic. That's incredible. I mean, wow, that's really good. That's killer. That's absolutely killer as a routine.
Which is why I never want to lose it.
No, you don't want to do that. It's not a cheap, no. It's not a cheap set, but it is really good. Really, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you one more question. which is a question that I've asked, I ask everyone who comes on the channel, which is, what's next? And what I mean by that is, you've got an amazing reputation in this industry. Everything that you've brought out is well thought out. There's nothing, and as you know, I've been reviewing a lot of your stuff recently for a future kind of review show special. So I've been looking at a lot of your back catalogue. I've not seen a bad Kyle Purnell product, like exactly the opposite. Everything's so well thought out, so well structured, commercial, it all makes sense. You've got a great reputation. I mean, if you stopped creating right now, people would be using your products for years and years and years to come. But I know that you're not slowing down. You've hinted at something coming out through Vanishing Ink, which looks very interesting with writing on playing cards. You showed me something, I'm not going to tell people what, but just before the cameras started rolling, you showed me something which I think is the absolute best version of what I saw, which you said is coming out through Penguin Magic at some point. And I know you've already filmed that because you told me. I know you're going back to Penguin Magic again at some point in the future to do more projects. So it sounds to me like you're not slowing down. What are your plans moving forward? Can you give us any hints of stuff coming out? And is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved that you'd like to do?
Yeah, of course. I definitely want to do more convention lectures because I love conventions. I love lecturing. I've lectured at one convention so far, and it was a pretty small one. It was fun. It was really good. It's called Battle of the Magicians. It was 2 years ago. It's at Canton, Ohio. It was really fun, but I definitely want to do more of those. Bucket list wise, I definitely would love to go on Fool Us. I definitely would like to go on Fool Us. But unfortunately, I, like a lot of people, I am what I call a WDWD. I'm a white dude with deck. So I'm not too different than a lot of people, right? Even though, like, if you look at the nuance, yeah, like what I do is different than, you know, what Dennis Bear does, which is different than what a lot of other guys do on Fool Us. But to a lay audience, I'm just a guy doing card tricks, right? So it's been kind of tough to get on that, but hopefully, you know, that is definitely on my bucket list. The other thing is, I always like to think of legacy as well as obsolescence of things, right? So it's nice that I'm getting my legacy kind of started with all these releases, but at the end of the day, they are video downloads, right? And so different platforms are going to change as things get on. And I want to put everything into a platform that I know very well will not go away over the next 100, 200 years, which would be a book. So eventually I would like to kind of put everything together into a collective works kind of thing. That's going to be way down the road, but
immediately. 100%. That's great.
Oh, well, thanks. And in the very immediate future, not magic related, a week from today, we're having a baby boy.
Oh man, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. You excited?
Nope. Yes, very, very, very excited.
have you figured out a name yet?
Yes, his name is going to be Zanzibar Buck Buck McFate.
Wow. Yeah.
Before you judge, it's a family name. No, his name is going to be Ollie, Oliver.
Ollie. I think yeah. I prefer Zanzibar. No, that's amazing.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Now, Ollie's great. Ollie's awesome. Congratulations, man. That's fantastic.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
And I can you give us any sneak peeks, or I'm not asking you to perform anything, but any ideas of routines that you've got coming out through various different companies over the next 6 months, 12 months?
Yeah. Let me see. I actually don't mind performing if you'd like to see something.
I would love to see something. Man, yes, that would make my day.
All right. Give me like 10 seconds. I'm going to move so I have a performing surface. And then we should be good to go. All right. And I think what I'm going to do is the effect that I kind of teased. That's going to be at Vanishing Ink.
Oh, fantastic. please.
All right, let me get these out of the way here. All right, Greg, I'll put this down here so you can see. My apologies for the clutter here. All right, so Greg, I got to tell you something. This is true. I am not a mind reader. It's true. Not a mind reader. Can't do it. But man, how cool would that be, right? Like being able to read minds? How freaking sweet would that be, right? That'd be sick. So as you could imagine, I went to the local library and I got their last copy, believe it or not, of Mind Reading for Morons, and changed my life. Changed my life, Greg. It was amazing. So they said, if you're going to learn how to mind read, there's a few things you're going to need. First of all, you want to get yourself a deck of kind of flashcards. I keep them in a card box, but they aren't really cards. More like index cards with different items, ideas, concepts, words. We can get back to this in just a little bit. But actually, Craig, if you don't mind, you're not really going to pick one per se. You are going to think of one as I go through them, okay? Just going to think of one. I'm just going to go through them. I probably won't go through the whole deck. I don't want to bore you to tears. I know we have stuff to do here. But as I go through, just kind of think of one. Okay. You don't have to say stop. You don't have to name it out loud yet. Just think of one. Okay. All right. And I'll keep going a little bit. I assume you probably have one. Yeah.
Yep. Got one.
Okay. All right. I want you to commit to it. Commit. Do not change your mind. Do not lie to me, Craig. The reason is the second thing they say that if you're going to learn to read minds is you always bring along a prediction. Okay. Mm-hmm. But there's a third thing too, Craig. Along with the prediction, they say never go anywhere without a backup prediction in case the first one's wrong.
Okay.
I got to be honest. I wasn't sure which one it is. So I'm going to keep this in frame here so you can see both of them here. All right. So, Craig, for the first time, because I'm committed to my predictions, I want you to commit to your choice word. So which one were you thinking of?
The diamond ring.
The diamond ring. Okay, that's interesting. That's really interesting. I know why. You'll know why very soon. It wasn't cup, right? Some people go for star. Some people go for dessert. But you went for diamond ring, which is really interesting to me, Craig. You could have gone for a heart, you could have gone for kites, ice cream, truck, really any one of those. You went for diamond ring, which I find so fascinating to me. If you were here, you could take this yourself, because I got to tell you from the very beginning, Craig, I wasn't sure which one it was going to be. At first, I thought, oh, this is the Craig prediction. This is for you. About now. No, it's got to be this one. No, there's no way. No. It didn't make sense to me, Craig, until I put them together, mm-hmm, and I saw the big picture.
That's sick. I love that. That's sick.
Thanks so much.
That's brilliant. That's awesome.
That's sweet.
That's great. That is so commercial, so engaging. I love the hook. I'm not a mind read. The whole thing, brilliant, 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 brilliant.
Thanks so much. We just filmed that this weekend. And so now the guys at Vanishing Ink have the footage. So hopefully, I'm guessing before the end of the year.
Well, I can see why Vanishing Ink would snap your hand off over that. I mean, that is great. That is incredible. I will definitely be getting one of those the second it comes out. Wow. In fact, I'm going to be ringing up Andy and Josh tomorrow, and he'll be like, any chance I can get one a little bit early? Because that is just, wow. That is great. Good stuff. Good stuff. That's great.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I get my copies, I'll send one over to you, because I like to send my friends free stuff.
Oh, you're the man. That's cool. And I know from the chat that we had beforehand, you've got a whole bunch of other stuff coming out as well. Like I said, the thing you've got coming out through Penguin soon, killer. Absolutely killer.
Thanks.
You have to just carry on creating, because like I say, the stuff that you bring out is amazing. It really is. And I'll tell people now, I'm in the middle of putting together a review show special on a lot of your back catalog. I'm going to be performing and reviewing with Ryland a lot of the stuff that you've brought out. So people need to look out for that, because outside of this stuff that you've got coming out in the next 6 or 12 months, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you've already bought out. Your At the Table lecture is incredible. I mean, there's so much value on that. I think some of the At the Table lectures that Murphy's bought out were so-so. Some of them weren't great. Some of them were awesome. Yours is definitely right up there. I mean,
it's, oh, wow.
Yeah, it really is awesome. So, yeah, you know what, Kyle? Thank you so much for finding time to come on the channel. I really appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you. Dude, it was, this has absolutely been a pleasure. And I appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you're doing on your channel, because I feel like it never fails to be underappreciated how much work goes into making a channel like yours. And there's the amount of content that you just chug out, absolutely incredible. So I appreciate what you're doing. I always tune in, especially for the review shows. So keep doing what you're doing too.
Oh, thanks, man. It means a lot. It really does. It is a lot of hard work, but hearing comments like that makes it all worthwhile. It really does. And you know what? In the future, I'd love to get you back on the channel again. That would be amazing. But for everybody that's watching this, I want you. Is there like, you've talked about lectures, you've talked about, obviously, do you have an online shop for magicians where the people can get your stuff directly from you?
Not currently, no. I have a website that is being built right now, but they can absolutely reach out to me on my email, which I can give to you. You can put it in the description if you'd like. You can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook. I will say this. I am just a few shy of 1,000 followers on Instagram. So I don't know. Maybe if you want to follow or something, I wouldn't. Just putting it out there.
You know what? I'm going to be following you on Instagram immediately. There we go. Put a picture of us on there as well. Okay, that's cool. And you've mentioned that one of your goals is to lecture more. For people that are watching this, that maybe organize lectures, should they email you and reach out to you about that?
Absolutely. That would be the best way to get a hold of me. It's MagicYle, MagicYle, and it's 77@comcast.net. I would love to come lecture for your club, or virtually, whatever works best for you guys.
Yeah, you've got an in-person lecture, a live lecture, and a virtual lecture. You know, you've got both of them. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's amazing. Kyle, thank you one more time. Guys, I want you to do me a favor. Leave a comment down below for Kyle. I'm sure he'll see it. Thank you again for coming and being a part of the channel. You are amazing. I am one of your biggest fans. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
You're amazing. Guys, make sure that you leave a comment down below. And don't forget to, if you want to see more videos like this, subscribe to the channel. I'm going to be back again tomorrow with another 3 videos, 1 at 2, 1 at 6, and 1 at 9. So I'll see you then. Thanks very much for watching. Kyle, you're the man. I'll see you again soon. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.